what would happen if God interrupted us? Some of us like interruption. Most of you probably know well enough by now that if I'm supposed to be in my office working on, I don't know, maybe a sermon, or writing a letter, or doing something like that, and someone is in the main office and I hear my name, I'm out there. I love interruptions. For me, life is lived in the interruptions. The planned stuff is okay, but the interruptions are wonderful. But what if God interrupted us? Right now, here, walked down the center aisle and interrupted me when I was preaching, or you when you were trying to pray. What if God barged into our daily lives, if God clearly made God's presence known? How would you feel? How would you respond? What change would God's presence bring in that moment to your life? Well, it's not often I get to preach on Zephaniah, but today we hear about Zephaniah wrestling with these very questions. The book of Zephaniah is set during the reign of King Josiah, who was Israel's reforming monarch. Keep that in mind. He was trying to bring change. It was in about 640 to 609 before the Common Era. And some of the visions in the book, though, including the oracle that we hear at the end, may reflect a later perspective. In the context of Josiah's reign, God's presence is disturbing, as it upsets the complacencies and the faithless habits of the people. God's presence undermines hypocrisy and indifference. God vows, "At that time, I will search Jerusalem with lamps, and I will punish the people who rest complacently on their dregs, those who say in their hearts, 'The Lord will not do good, nor will he do me any harm.'" God's presence will surprise those who assume that God is a benign, indifferent deity who is of little consequence to the reality of daily life. God's presence will also disturb the ones who vow faith in Yahweh with one breath, but in the next breath worship other gods. "I will cut off from this place every remnant of Baal and the name of the idolatrous priests." They're always hard on the priests. "Those who bow down and swear to the Lord, but also swear by Milcom. Those who have turned back from following the Lord, who have not sought the Lord or inquired of him." Now, it's tempting to jump right to the end, to that final oracle of the book that proclaims good news, and God's presence brings finally joyful celebration. And that's really the message of this book, of Zephaniah, of the Advent season, of our faith. The Lord your God is in your midst. God will renew you in his love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. But this message has its deepest significance when it's set in contrast to what's happened before. Despite the people's indifference, despite their hypocrisy, despite the cause for cosmic judgment, God's entry into the world brings celebration, restoration, and new life. Now, things like indifference and hypocrisy, that sounds rather harsh, doesn't it? We don't really like to talk about things. After all, we Canadians are awfully nice. But have we also succumbed to indifference? Do we worship other gods while proclaiming that we worship the One? What if God interrupted us? What would God find? Do our actions match what we commit and say that we believe in? And do we live in a state of readiness of God's presence to enter our midst, or instead, do we live in the indifferent conviction that God will do neither harm nor good? A benign deity. Now, if that form, that last little bit about the joyful celebration of Zephaniah was written during the time that Israel was in exile. It talks about a time when they, as a country, as a nation, as a people, had suffered great shame. The nation had been ravaged by conquering armies of foreign nations. The people were scattered. As you will recall, Israel lived in fear and great darkness and disorientation. And it's there that God comes to them and proclaims to them in their hurt and in their pain and in their loss a new world. God makes a promise. The Lord has taken away judgments against you. He's turned away your enemies. The King of Israel, the Lord, is in your midst, and you shall fear disaster no more. Jerusalem was earlier described as a violent and unfaithful city. And next thing you know, in Zephaniah, Jerusalem is personified as a woman rejoicing in song. Quite a turnaround, don't you think? Not only does God's presence bring joy that casts out fear, it brings restoration of justice and aid to the poor. A new way of life, where the people, how they relate to themselves, to each other, and to God is fundamentally different than before they experienced the presence of God. So what would change in our world if that happened? What fears would be dispelled? What justices would be overturned? I could not help think of this week when I watched a video clip of the first plane of Syrians arriving in Toronto. I was struck by the contrast in tone from a few short months ago. The people who are arriving, fleeing the violence and terror of their countries, look just like us. That young family with the little girl that the Prime Minister gave a little teddy bear to, and the Premier as well, they just look like one of our families. And they are now, of course. So what makes us think that that couldn't be us? We live in relative peace, and we can't even imagine what they are going through. But when I think of my ancestors and know why they came to Canada, I begin to remember in that deep way that we do, ah, yes, they went through this too. And who's to say it won't ever happen to us again? But for a moment there, I could see us in them and them in us. They could no more resemble terrorists than any one of us does. But not long ago, our country didn't act to help because we were afraid and we were suspicious. And I was unaware until yesterday, whenever I found myself in tears at the sight, how very indifferent to persecuted people's pain we had become. We are experiencing a return to ourselves in some way. I am not saying that our Prime Minister is the new Jesus. Please do not hear that. Someone takes that out of here today, I will have to take serious measures. All I'm saying is that something has shifted. Thanks to a number of factors, something has shifted. Perhaps God has just reminded us of who we are and what we can do. We're experiencing a change in perspective. From complacency, being smug, but don't think ourselves that way, quite happy with our state and the way we are, to being interrupted. In fact, asking for interruption, asking for people to come and join us. We're being moved from indifference, seeing pictures on the news that don't relate to us, perhaps, that is happening somewhere else, some other time, to compassion, to being open, and from judgment. Those people are different than us. To the joy of seeing the look on a family's face when they're reunited after many years, or the joy of a child who is overwhelmed with the hospitality of strangers, or perhaps the joy of people who are saying to them, "Welcome home." This Sunday is devoted to joy, and we hear that not only the people of Israel experienced the joy and a change of perspective, not just them. It's God who bursts into song with joy over what the people are. God will rejoice over you with gladness. He will renew you in his love. He will exult over you with loud singing as on a day of festival. Last time I checked, joy is not nearly as subdued as an Anglican church service. Joy erupts. Joy is something that overtakes you whenever you get to light 3 candles. Joy is not predictable. It's not quiet. It's not dignified. And the Hebrew words used in verse 17 are used elsewhere in the Bible to describe great jubilation. The Lord rejoices over his beloved, over Judah and Jerusalem, as a bridegroom rejoices over his bride. That's in Isaiah. As David danced in front of the Ark of the Covenant in exultation, so God rejoices over God's people. 2 Samuel. As the morning stars sang at the creation of the world, so God sings with elation over God's beloved in Job. We're accustomed to images of God as judge, or as a shepherd benignly gathering the flock together and making sure they're all okay. But how often do we think about God as one who rejoices, one who sings far better than me, one who dances, one who is overtaken with the joy of what God's people are doing? That joy springs from love renewed, relationship restored, and it's not one-sided. It's not just us who dance with joy, but it's God. And this image of God doesn't bear any resemblance to Aristotle's unmoved mover, or many people's image of a divine watchmaker who's setting the world in motion and watching it go. Or remember the song From a Distance that Bette Midler sang? God is watching us, God is watching us from a distance. A God that's at a distance doesn't dance with joy. A God that's at a distance doesn't have tears run down God's cheeks whenever joy is clear, when compassion is evidence. No, God is moved and deeply affected by our actions and our attitudes. That's what happens when God enters into the world, when it enters into us with the mystery and the wonder of incarnation, when we are open to being vehicles of that. This Sunday we speak of joy, a joy of a people redeemed and restored, the joy of a God who is deeply invested in the life of the world. God sings, God shouts, God rejoices, and we, who are wondrously and inexplicably God's beloved, join in that celebration. So may we be interrupted. May we absolutely be interrupted by God, and may we rejoice in it. Amen.